And I'm really happy today to have Michelle Smith to talk to all of us. Hillary had indicated that she thought this would be something that our attorneys would really enjoy and get a lot out of. And coincidentally, Michelle, who is a former guardian ad litem attorney, she has a business where she does exactly this type of lifestyle strategy and balanced life seminars and trainings. So it all came together, and hopefully we're going to have a great presentation today. Michelle, you probably, like I said, you may know her from, she worked with, for the program for 4 years. She was a supervising attorney in the Eighth Circuit. She's had her own law practice throughout that time, 2003, where she's done, you know, a lot of criminal defense and probate and some estate planning. She's also been a public defender intern and then also worked at the state attorney's office. So she's got lots of experience in different areas of the law. And in addition to being an attorney, she's also been a, like I said, a lifestyle coach. And she, the name of her company is Balanced Life. Oh, I'm going to get it wrong, Michelle. It's Balanced Life Wellness. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and she has been a personal trainer for a number of years as well. And I actually have a few friends who she trains, and I've heard she's just the best at that. So anyways, with that, I'm going to hand it over to Michelle. It's very quiet. I appreciate that, and we'll go from there.
All right. Thanks, Mary Kay. And it's quiet. I'm so not used to that. I'm used to sort of in-person interaction, so I can sort of get a feel for the vibe in the room, but I'm going to trust that that's going to just transfer through the phone. So I'm not sure if everybody got the roadmap for how we're going to address all of the issues today, because it really is based on a workshop that is designed to take all day long. It really is 6 to 8 hours, but I've distilled it down so that we're just going to cut to the chase, get to the nitty-gritty, and we're going to talk about what stress is, whether or not you are stressed. You're going to get a chance to identify your own particular stressors. And then we're going to get to how do you fix it? How do you either eliminate it, reduce it, or manage it? So I want to start off with a few, what I found to be very startling statistics when I started putting this workshop together about how stress is affecting us as a society, and also a few statistics about how it affects us specifically as lawyers, because there's a specific culture that goes along with the practice of law. And within that is an even more specific sort of subculture that goes along with each area of practice. So dependency law has its own particular stressors, just like family law does, criminal defense, prosecution. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and I'm just going to jump into it. The American Medical Association has said that 85% of all physical illness is directly attributable to stress. And I mean all illnesses. I'm talking about cancer, hypertension, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, depression, you name it. And the precursor for all of those diseases is stress. The World Health Organization says that stress is America's number one health problem. And the statistics, which were quite frankly very old. I can't believe that no one's gone out and done the research to bring these current. But at the time, and this was like early 2001-ish, one-third of all lawyers, one-third, and I think that's probably a very low statistic, that's probably a very conservative statistic, but one-third of all lawyers show signs of clinical depression or substance abuse that's directly linked to stress. And the state bar studies indicate that 60% of all disciplinary proceedings in some states involved attorneys who were chemical dependents or mentally impaired. And I know that when I was practicing as a guardian attorney, and definitely at times throughout my practice, there have been days or moments where I'm like, I am definitely mentally impaired. I am feeling like I need to tap into the resources of these mental health experts that I'm going to be doing a direct exam on for a TBR adjudicatory. But it really is no laughing matter, and I think all of us can probably identify with the type of stress that we're talking about. And let's identify. Let's say what stress is. And it's kind of like, and forgive my analogy, but it's probably the most salient analogy that I can give to drive the point home. It's kind of like the definition for pornography. You don't really know what it is, but you know it when you see it. Like, if I asked any of you who are on the line, are you stressed, you would know whether you are or are not. Yeah. But it's really, really difficult to define. Clinicians and researchers have not been able to put a finger on exactly what it is because, quite frankly, from a physiological standpoint, our bodies are designed to manage stress. We as beings are designed to manage stress. It can be beneficial. You can be more productive at certain stress levels. So what we're really talking about when we're talking about stress is distress. We are talking about those prolonged periods of just revving high that the body cannot sustain, the body cannot tolerate. We were not built for that. Up to a point, stress is no longer beneficial for you, and when it deteriorates very rapidly, and it becomes very, very harmful. And the information that I'll be giving you guys today about how to better manage that or in some ways eliminate it completely or reduce it, it really is, it's a wake-up call, and it's potentially life-saving information. So just to be clear, we're talking about a state of distress. We're not talking about necessarily those moments just before you stand up, give your opening statement for a TPR or a dependency adjudicatory, or when you're standing at the podium and you're having to manage new information during a judicial review. We're talking about dealing with really the nature of the practice and potentially that inability at the end of your workday to sort of de-escalate things and bring things back to homeostasis, to a state of normalcy. So let's figure out whether or not you are stressed. I'm going to give you guys sort of a list of symptoms that are associated with stress, and just sort of on your own, in your own minds, give an amen whether or not it really applies to you. Some of the symptoms, and we've got someone's typing, or I'm hearing some typing in the back.
Turn your speaker off?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So just consider whether or not any of these apply to you.
Oh, sorry.
Frequent headaches, jaw clenching or pain, neck aches, back aches, muscle spasms, difficulty breathing, sighing throughout the day, excess anxiety or worry or guilty feelings or nervousness, heartburn, stomach pains, nausea, flatulence, gritting and grinding your teeth, increased anger, frustration, and hostility.
Yep.
Feeling overloaded or overwhelmed, reduced work productivity or efficiency, frequent use of over-the-counter drugs across the board, whether it's pain medication, sleep meds. If any of those resonated with you, if any of those are symptoms that you're experiencing, then more than likely you are stressed. So, and I know that seems like a no-brainer, but there, and I think about that Activia commercial where, you know, they have these women gathered together and Jamie Lee Curtis is asking them, okay, well, what do you consider to be your state of normal? And gastrointestinal upset is one of the biggest and most prevalent indicators of being stressed, and that has become the normal for so many people. You see meds on TV all the time to address acid reflux, stomach upset, gas, all of that. And that's great, but it doesn't get to the root of the problem. And I'm really encouraging everybody to get to the root of the problem. Now, I've mentioned some of the serious illnesses that are directly attributable to stress, and I cannot emphasize enough, and I want you all to just kind of take a moment. I mean, I know at least in our circuit, I can think of judges and attorneys, like I can count them quickly on both hands, and still need some extra fingers for people that you can see, like, oh yeah, that person is definitely stressed, and they've suffered from major illnesses. And I'm talking about the big C. I'm talking about cancer. I'm talking about heart disease. Judges and attorneys and even legal support staff who have suffered heart attacks, shingles, arthritis, you name it, and we see it every day. And it doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't. If you'll address the issue up front, you're either going to pay for it on the front end or you're going to pay for it on the tail end. And let me tell you, paying for it on the tail end really sits you on your hind end. It lands you in the hospital. It has you taking multiple sick days. It has you taking multiple sick days that are actually mental health days, just because you're not really addressing the toll that your life is taking on you and the way that you have chosen to manage it. And the way that a lot of people choose to manage it, their maladaptive behaviors, is stuff that's bad for you. And again, this one's definitely keep it to yourself, but I'm just going to throw some adaptive behaviors, some coping mechanisms out there. And if any apply to you, just give a little silent amen. And we're talking about smoking. We're talking about drinking too much. I'm not trying to mess with your glass of wine at the end of your day if that is something that you enjoy. I'm just going to put a little plug in there for the Reds. Go for the Reds, because the Reds are actually more beneficial health-wise than your Zins or your Cavs. Not your Cavs, but your Zins or your, I don't know, your Pinot Grigios. But overeating or undereating. How many of us do engage in emotional eating? Directly attributed to stress. Zoning out for hours in front of your TV or your computer. What do you do when you get home at the end of the day, after you take care of all of the many, many responsibilities that you may have depending on your life and your family situation? Withdrawing from friends, using pills or drugs to relax. Do you use caffeine to wake up in the morning? Do you use sleeping pills to get a good night's sleep? Stress-related. Sleeping too much. Procrastinating. And the other extreme, filling up every minute of the day to avoid facing issues or facing your problems. And then here's a big one, because I have practiced dependency. I know about the interplay between attorney, staff, lay volunteer, the court, DCF, caseworkers, and do you take out your stress on others on occasion? Again, just a little silent amen to yourself. Okay. There's a possibility that you are stressed, and though you may not have recognized it as being directly stress-related, or maybe you did, and just it's become such a normal part of your life, or such a consistent part of your life, that you've decided that this is my new normal. And again, I'm here to say that it doesn't have to be that way. Because quite frankly, that's unpleasant. That's an unhappy experience. And let's face it, everybody wants to live a better quality of life. And I'm not talking about material things. I'm talking about feeling comfortable in your own skin, feeling good about who you are, how you are, whatever weight you are, what you do. You should be able to take stock in that, recognize it as valuable, and enjoy the life that you live. And if you're not doing that, I can tell you that it's going to take its toll on you physically, emotionally, energetically, and it does not have to be that way. So at this point, I'm going to ask if you guys have anything to write with. And if you don't, that's cool. But there's something sort of magical that happens when you write stuff down. So what I want you to do is just take a few seconds and think about the top five stressors in your professional life and the top five stressors in your personal life. I'm just going to be quiet for a few seconds. Mary Kay, you still on the line?
I'm here.
Okay. I'm going to use you as my gauge. So you got them? Top five stressors in your professional life, top five stressors in your personal life. And you write them down, and you look at them, and okay. Just think about them. Everybody got them? I'm gonna kind of assume that everybody's got them. And I'm also going to kind of assume that everybody's, you know, you're relatively undistracted, but I know how lunchtime trainings go, so hopefully everybody's able to focus on sort of taking at least the next, 35, 38 minutes to really address something that can seriously improve your quality of life, like literally after we get off the phone. So I'm just going to take a stab in the dark and say that maybe some of the professional stressors that you guys are dealing with, the nature of the law.
Duh.
The nature of dependency. Did I hear a duh? Your phone's not on mute because I think I heard that. But, yeah, duh. It's tough. You are dealing with representing the best interest of children under what seems like more often than not just absolutely horrific circumstances. And one of the things that we're not going to go into great detail about, and it's also a clinical term, so I try not to trample on the feet of people who have, you know, more qualified initials behind their names, but vicarious traumatization. We live through these families and through these children, and it is horrible. It stinks. And unfortunately, the cases that we remember the most are the ones that are the worst. Our successes kind of, you know, fly under the radar. Those families get reunified. And those are the victories that you really want to sink your teeth into. Now, you do have your TPRs. You've got your dependency adjudicatories that will hold parents accountable where otherwise they were not willing to be accountable. Yeah, those are victories, but it's still in a context where it is so incredibly sad. And to deny the fact that doesn't take a toll on you on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, on a moment-to-moment basis, that you don't carry that stuff home with you, that you don't recognize that you're on call 24/7 because you're literally dealing with the lives of children, to not recognize that is doing a disservice to yourself. And even if you recognize it on a superficial level, you don't let it sink in. Like, you don't let it really hit you because it's painful. And one of the things that we're going to talk about is acceptance and really feeling those emotions and not being afraid to feel those emotions, because they are transient. They will pass if you will let them. And you're going to have to take time to renew yourself every day so that you can get up and fight the fight again. But that takes discipline, it takes practice, and it ain't easy. I'm not saying anything that I'm telling you guys today is going to be easy, but I am saying that it will save your life and it is worthwhile. So, personal stressors. And that was just one of many professional stressors that I think we can all rattle off. It could be, you know, high caseloads. It can be working with others within your program, working with DCF attorneys, working with caseworkers for whatever agency is managing the caseloads on behalf of DCF. It can be any number of things from a professional standpoint. It can be a judge who just won't get it. Just recognizing it and identifying it. You got to name it. And then personal. Good Lord, after you get finished, you know, managing hundreds of families' lives and being the decision maker for how things are going to take place from a legal standpoint, you got to go home and deal with your own family. Whatever your family situation is, if it's friends, if it's you're working so hard you don't have friends, if it's your husband or your wife or your partner or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your mom or your dad, whoever, you have a personal life that you also have to manage beyond the hours of 8:30 to 5, the proper hours. But then, you know, you always get the phone call in the middle of the night that has you drafting a motion that needs to be prepared the next day. It's all stressful. I understand the realities of it. But the first thing that you have to do, and now we're going to get into the strategies of how do you fix it. In this world of chaos, with all of these moving parts, how do you either get rid of it, how do you reduce it, or how do you manage it? And we just went through, hopefully everybody went through, the first step. You have to name it. You have to identify it. You have to know exactly what your stressors are. That's a huge first step. That makes it a lot less nebulous and opaque, like, oh my God, I'm just stressed out. No, name it. Once you've done that, like I said before, however it is making you feel, acknowledge that. Feel it. Let it come.
Have it lined up.
There's, I don't know if any of you engage in or make use of acupuncture or Chinese medicine. They actually believe that 100% of all diseases are directly attributable to stress. I tend to go with that percentage. There's also a physiological basis for some of the Chinese medicine, and I hope I'm not, you know, offending anybody. This is a non-religious presentation, so I'm not trying to bump up against anybody's belief system, but I'm going with the science of it, the physiology behind it. And when you block emotions, it causes disease. It causes disruption. And how many of us pride ourselves on being able, as litigators, as analytical thinkers, as attorneys who do this day in and day out, compartmentalizing and having your walls. You've got your walls up because you have to manage so much that you pride yourself on being able to separate things out or block things out or keep things at bay, keep things that are difficult to process or painful to process at bay. And that is a skill that you have hung your hat on.
Yeah,
it's a scary proposition, but I'm going to suggest that, okay, you don't have to blow up the walls immediately, but let them down a little. Let them down and let yourself actually feel it. It'll come out in more of a trickle than coming out as wanting to shake the living daylights out of anybody you're working with during the day, which is a good thing. That's improved professionalism, if you want to put it in a legal context. So name it, identify it, and feel it, and let it run its course. And then the next strategy is, and if you're taking notes, if you want to number them, some people like numbers and whatnot, name it, number one. Number two, once you felt it, change your thinking about it. And, okay, I want you guys to take your phones off mute just for a second and answer whether or not you think you can change your thoughts. Go ahead. I need some responses. Here's the interaction part. I got giggles. The giggles tell me either I don't want to take my phone off mute or
Of course you can change your thoughts.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else?
I think you can, but it often can take a long time and a lot of work.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, you can change your thoughts for a minute, but then the bad ones creep back in.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. All of those accurate. And this is the fun part. This is probably my favorite part of the workshop because it's one of those say what kind of concepts. And yes, you can change your thoughts, and I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version of the neurophysiology behind that. And the attorney who chimed in and said, yeah, but you can change them for a second, but you go back to the bad thoughts. Well, you do. And the reason that happens is because you've got neural pathways that basically haven't been exercised, just like a muscle. I think we've all probably heard, you know, we only use a small percentage of our brain capacity, and that is in fact true. And the more basic physiology behind it is that they weren't too far off. I don't know how many of you guys are sci-fi fantasy buffs, but the Matrix, little batteries, copper tops, that really is us. We're made up of mostly water. Water's the best conductor of electricity. The way you move, the way that you think, every thought that you produce is because of an electrical impulse. And the way that the brain is wired is that for thoughts that you continually have, that particular neural pathway of the brain gets exercised over and over and over and over again. You have a number of dormant neural pathways that are just waiting to be accessed and are available for positive thinking, but they are weak and unused. It takes practice, it takes discipline, and on the most basic level, this is common sense. This is really common sense. But the implementation of it is incredibly challenging. And the sort of say what part of it that I was mentioning was that maybe you guys don't know that the way that the brain is wired and the way that the brain works, it does not differentiate between a memory, a present experience, or an imagined thought. And I'll repeat that one more time because you might be like, yeah. But really, in your physical being, your mind does not differentiate between a memory, a past experience, or an imagined thought. And if you want to go through a little exercise, we do a more thorough set of exercises in the workshop, but just a little exercise. If you think about any one of those, either something from your past, where you are right in this moment, or if you imagine something better, if you imagine something negative, you will notice a physiological change in your body. If it's something that is stressful, if it's painful, if it is something that makes you angry, you will notice your heart rate increase, your blood pressure will increase, you may visibly shake. Your body responds to that, both physically and emotionally. And the reason it's so difficult to have a positive thought and hold on to that positive thought is because those neural pathways for your negative thoughts, like I said, have been worked out. Those muscles are large. Those neural pathways are well worn. And this one is sort of an answer to yourself, but you experience 12,000 to 15,000 thoughts every day. Now, I actually thought that was kind of low, but statistically speaking, the National Science Foundation and the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology have determined that we think anywhere from 12,000 to 15,000 thoughts per day. And the question that I'm going to pose to you is, for you personally, how many of those thoughts are negative? How many of those thoughts are positive? Here's the kicker. How many of those thoughts are on a continuous loop directly associated with past negative experiences or past experiences that you deem negative, that affect you negatively? How many of those thoughts, especially if you have children, how many of those thoughts are spent worrying about your kids? Past painful experiences, personal relationships, breakups, worrying about car accidents, especially for you guys down there in Broward and Dade, getting on I-95. How many of those? How many of you wake up and before your feet even hit the floor when you're getting out of bed, you're thinking a negative thought?
No.
It happens. And they slip in, and it's what we have done for so long that you almost convince yourself, and I know we've all said, of course you can change your thoughts. But when it comes to the rubber meeting the road, how many of us actually take the time to change them? If you recognized how powerful your thoughts are, you'd never think another negative thought in your life. You'd never put yourself down. You'd never question yourself. You would be more gentle and compassionate with other people. And it would literally change your life. So, now that we've talked about you not being your thoughts, you're not your thoughts, you can change them. And one of the things I wish we had time to do in this particular training is to go through the exercises of changing your thoughts. Scenarios, like typical scenarios, where you go through it the way that you normally go through it, and then you push pause, and you take a moment to consider a more positive thought, a more positive perspective, a more positive attitude about whatever the interaction is. And you go through it with that mindset. And it completely changes the way that you interact with the world. It changes the way that you interact with yourself. And you notice the physiological benefits of that immediately. You feel better. You just feel better. When you're positive, you feel better. And I'm not talking about, okay, fake it till you feel it. Just put on a happy face. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that change taking place on a much, much deeper level, like real change, not superficial, but real change. And again, it takes discipline and it takes practice. So that was number two. That was the biggest. Now, another biggie is, especially for us, I actually had this mixed in with what I consider the basics, but I'm going to pull it out because I think this is a huge one for attorneys. And I know when I was working with the Guardian at Litem program, we did a circuit-wide training on time management. That's a huge stressor in the context of dependency law because, you know, I've talked about how chaotic it can be. How potentially stressful phones going out for lunchtime trainings. But really, you have the structure of your work week that is usually governed by court appearances. It's governed by court appearances, maybe mediations that you've scheduled. You've got your calendar, so you've got your framework for how your week is going to look. Now, there's a ton of other stuff that I know crops up at any given moment. Who has ever felt the stress of sitting at their desk, maybe prepping their cases for court, and you feel a looming figure over your shoulder, and it's your staff person, probably with a volunteer in tow, bringing a major issue to you that has to be addressed immediately, and you're like, I got to be in court in 30 minutes. How do you manage that? Well, people, it is what it is. There's some internal factors that you have complete control over, and there are some external factors. Well, quite frankly, all external factors you have absolutely no control over. So in terms of acceptance, it's not just the acceptance of the emotions that come along with it, the way that it makes you feel, but there are certain things that you just ain't going to fix. You're not going to fix it. You're not going to change it. And it's not surrender. It's not giving up and possibly making tweaks and changes and improvements in the way that the system functions, but it's an acceptance and a relinquishing of stress about, oh my God, this is the way that it is, and I wish it was different. No. It is the way that it is. And there's a certain level of acceptance that everybody would benefit from giving themselves over to. And in our office, we were always able to kind of just laugh about the stuff that we can't change that. Not right now. Not in this moment. So time management, which is a completely, it's kind of a subset of the workshop that I do because it's such a huge deal. But it's taking a look at a day in the life, a week in the life, and figuring out some sort of organizational formula for yourself. There are lots of them out there. I presented a couple of them to the attorneys and the staff people and a few volunteers in our circuit. But really, you need a system. You need a system that works. And because of time constraints, I can't go into a lot of details about that, but I want to address it. I want to bring it up. That time management is one of the biggest stressors in the practice of law in general, but especially in dependency law, where there are so many moving parts and you do have emergencies that crop up. And the emergencies are truly emergencies. It's not something that you can say, okay, talk to me later about that. You may take a triage approach, where we had a scale in our office where before a staff person would even open up their mouth to tell me what was going on, I'd have them rank it on a scale from 1 to 10. How important is this? And then we talk about where certain circumstances or certain situations ranked on that scale so that they were better able to put things in perspective and maybe not burst into your office. And just as an aside, it was also like great training opportunities for, okay, do you really need the attorney for this particular situation? But that's a completely separate thing. So, time management. So the three things that we've gone through thus far: identify your stressors, change your thoughts, and manage your time better. Now, let's see how we're doing on time. Okay, getting through the basics. And these are the no-brainers. These are the things that you know will make you feel better that you just don't do. And these are pretty easy to go through. First and foremost, breathe. And that's just like the comment of course you can change your thoughts. Of course you're breathing. But the majority of the time, if you are working in a high stress to moderate stress professional environment, you're engaging in shallow breathing. And that's why one of the symptoms of stress is deep sighing or yawning, because your body's simply not getting enough oxygen. If you take a few seconds just to take a couple of deep breaths, immediate effects: decreased heart rate, decreased blood pressure, calmer thinking. So breathe. Did somebody just take a deep breath? I love it. Instant implementation. Also, get some sleep. 7 to 8 hours of sleep. That might not be a reality for some of you. I don't know if you all have small children in your home, maybe newborns. I don't know what your situation is, but to the best of your ability, try to manage your time so that you get sufficient sleep. Significantly increases brain function, increases productivity, makes you less likely to be stressed, and then there's a cascading effect of, all right, you don't eat regularly. You indulge in emotional eating. So get some sleep. stay hydrated. If your judges allow it, if your bailiffs allow it, if it's allowed, carry water with you all the time. I'm not even going to give you something that you can put on a to-do list to check off if you're someone who is sort of stressed out by, oh my God, it's another thing that I have to do. So I'm not even going to go with how many ounces of water you should consume during a day. Keep water with you and drink it throughout the day. If you're thirsty, drink water and opt for water. I know that there are a lot of things that are marketed out there that are supposed to make water tastier, and really, if you can, just go with water. Eat healthy foods. Fresh food, prepared at home, or eat at restaurants that provide you healthy food selections. Be more aware of what you put in your mouth than you are about what grade of gas you put in your car. And a good rule of thumb is 3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, with snacks mid-morning and mid-afternoon. Be active. If you want to lose weight, that's fine. That's a perfectly fine goal. Vigorous activity three to five times a week results in a significant reduction in stress. But I'm talking about if you are sedentary, if you go to work, come home, eat dinner, go to bed, watch TV, go to bed, then I'm talking about something as simple as a walk, a 15 to 20 minute walk to start.
I gotta start doing that.
Even if the thoughts come, let them come. Even if your mind is racing, in Chinese medicine they call that monkey mind because it's all over the place and it's constantly, let them come. They'll pass if you let them. They will pass. Takes practice. I'm going to do the next thing right now. I'm taking a deep breath. Slow down and be still. If you don't like the concept of meditation, don't call it meditation. Call it taking a moment of silence for your sanity, because that's truly what it is. And one of the things that you can implement today is start out with 5 to 10 minutes of quiet. No TV, no computer, no kids, no husband, no wife, no partner. And observe your thoughts and let them pass. You have complete control over that. And your goal is to quiet your mind. You are in control of your thoughts. And if even 5 to 10 minutes seems like a daunting task, here's one that I think everybody can do. So you're moving from one task to the next. Maybe you're getting up to go to court. Maybe you're driving into work. You're driving home. You're sitting in your car. 15 seconds. Turn your car off, and before you put your hand on the latch to open the door, sit for 15 seconds. Take a couple of deep breaths. And just kind of hit the reset button. And then move on to your next task. You'll feel that much better. Simple things, start out with baby steps. If biting off a huge chunk of time, 5 to 10 minutes, if biting off that time seems a little undoable for you, seconds, break it down to seconds. But you have to take time, because that's where you develop the skills, that's where you develop the discipline to become aware of your own thoughts, to clear your mind, and then to plug in more positive thoughts. And it works in that process. It's super hard to jump from a negative thought to a positive thought about something. It's possible, but it's much easier if you work through the process of relaxing and clearing your mind. I've talked about acceptance, the acceptance of how things affect you, and allowing yourself to feel some of that, and then allowing it to pass and trusting that it will pass. You might have another case that's coming up that's going to cause you to go through that same cycle again. All the more reason that you're going to need that 5 to 10 minutes to start of quiet time. You have to hit the reset button. So it's the acceptance of how this work is making you feel, and then I'm going to go with the Serenity Prayer. I don't even have to reinvent the wheel for this one. The Serenity Prayer is no joke. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. There's some things that you're just not going to fix. If you are stressed out about, and I'm going to go with personal on this one because I focused a lot on the legal stuff. If you're spending a lot of time trying to fix your spouse, stop it. If you're spending a lot of time trying to fix anything, the way that other people behave, stop it. That's a huge source of stress for most people, and it's like beating your head against a wall. The single most powerful thing that you have control over, the only thing that you really have any control over, is you. So I say go with that and do the inside work. It's an inside job. And then have fun. Have fun. Do you even know what fun is for you anymore? Kids don't need an instruction manual on how to have fun. They just do it. Animals, I got two Rhodesian Ridgeback puppies. I don't need to tell them how to have fun. It's instinctive. It's instinctive for us too, but we've gotten so far away from that because we are busy being responsible grown-ups, which is necessary. You got to make a living. You got to get things done. But don't forget to have fun. Do something that you enjoy every single day. And again, don't feel like, oh my God, I got to plan a big trip to the beach. If you can, great, do it. If that's what comes to mind immediately, great, do it. If you're thinking, oh my God, I don't have time, or oh my God, I don't have the money, it doesn't have to be something enormous. If, okay, I've touched on caffeine consumption, but I'm a huge Starbucks fan, so relish your Starbucks experience. Enjoy your coffee. If that is your enjoyment for the day, at least be present for it. Show up for it and soak it in. Doesn't have to be enormous. But do something for yourself that you enjoy every single day. You deserve it. So how do you implement these strategies? You just do it. There aren't any excuses. There's not a single one of you. If you all unmuted your phone and just dumped on me all of the reasons why you can't do any one of these things, I would tell you, I don't believe it, because we're talking about your health. We are talking about you as an individual, your well-being as a whole. And quite frankly, you are in the service industry. You are of service to children. You are of service to families. You are of service to your communities. And how are you going to continue giving if you're running on empty? The first person you have to take care of, and parents, okay, I don't have kids, I got puppies, but parents, when you're like, I am responsible for my kids, yes, you are. Be the best and most whole person that you can be in imparting to your children. You have to take care of yourself. It starts with you. So you either pay for it up front by changing your thoughts, your habits, and your lifestyle to prevent your body from breaking down, or you pay for it with your health. And I would say, take time and make the investment now. So be encouraged. You're all important. You're all valuable. And you really all should be able to live the best quality life possible to continue being of service to others. So, wow. All right, that's all I got for today.